Hi, my name's Adam Ferrier, and this is Uncommon.
Uncommon and Uncommon Clips are produced by Neural, a digital agency built for challenger brands and talent. To learn more, head to neural.com. That's NEURALLE.com.
I was reading about you and reading a lot of things that you write about yourself as well, and looking at your background, how you got into this area. So, you know, undergrad, arts, psychology, commerce, marketing, postgrad, diploma of psych, and then you did your master's of psychology and clinical psychology. But before that, did you ever have this like inkling of this, people fascinate me, therefore I will do psychology? Or is it one of those things where you sit down with like a school counselor and they're like, oh, you're good at these subjects, you should do this, and then it sort of fit your personality? Like, what about you, Adam, and your personality suits this stuff?
I used to trade shares on the landline at lunchtime at school. So there was one landline, and every lunchtime I'd trade shares all lunch hour, and then I'd go back to class. And I was always known as the kind of the slightly odd kind of share market kind of guy. But I was also really fascinated and really interested in people, how they tick, you know, constantly asking why, all that kind of shit. But I was failing school badly. I went to see a tutor, and the tutor said, what are your interests? And I said, money and people. And the tutor, a guy called Kim Sawyer, said, you should become a consumer psychologist. And I thought, oh, wow, I don't even know what one is, but that sounds perfect. So I studied commerce and I studied psychology. I did my thesis in identifying the underlying constructs of cool people, because I knew it was a way to commercialize my psychological understanding. And so that's always been the interplay, right? And so that person changed my life by being so deft at being able to tease out my interests so precisely. The whole forensic thing and the cult stuff was just happenstance, and that when I graduated, I needed a job. And the easiest place to get a job was in corrective services, because my girlfriend's mum was the head of psychological services for New South Wales Corrections.
Wow.
So I got a job there. And then that was equally fascinating as well, right? So I reckon the really interesting thing is, even if you have a goal, that doesn't mean there's not other things in life that are going to be really interesting. So just stay open to those as well. And so I've been able to, in my early career, I've been able to blur all that stuff together. Which is kind of cool, kind of lucky, I guess.
Yeah, those deviations are quite interesting. And they build a part of your personality, which become interesting, vulnerable stories, I would say.
Yeah, definitely. And when everything is so flittery these days, and you know, and everyone's got superficial interest in everything, being able to go deep in a parallel interest to what you currently do is really important. Mm. And kind of just rewiring the brain in a way that's really different but quite deep, because you'll constantly draw on that and see things in a slightly different way as well.
Because my deviation was because I'd worked in hospitality. I'm kind of similar to you in that I'd always been fascinated by people and money. I just wasn't aware of it up until I was maybe even 25. I just didn't have that self-awareness. But at least before that, when I was at uni, I'd fallen into the world of hospitality as any good wog does. And I don't know why, but like wine became a thing. It became a part of like, you know, a badge of honor, part of my personality. And so I worked there as like a sommelier, like a wine taster, wine buyer for a while at a bunch of different restaurants. So it's always intriguing how, like, I end up hating it. Like I truly believed that I was going to become a restaurateur with this commercial knowledge and this intrigue in hospitality. But eventually I found myself into the corporate world. Did you ever have that moment where you're working in the corrections facilities and you're like, oh, I'm going to become this very important criminologist that starts writing about these people? Or have
I know your question. I'm going to cut you short, but I love the question because I've got the perfect answer. A friend of mine worked for Rio Tinto, and he invited all, and he was maybe 27, and I was working corrective services in Bathurst Prison, and he decided to have a lunch at Rockpool in the Rocks in Sydney. and all of his mates were there, and all of our mates were there, but they all had these corporate kind of gigs, and I was there from back the bloody prison. And I thought, oh, shit, there's just got to be more. There's more fun out there than being stuck in the prison. And it kind of reignited my my quest or my like for money and the things that it avails to you.
Yeah.
So that was my moment. But just also on your sommelier thing, Seth Godin has written a good book called All People Are Liars, All Marketers Are Liars. And he uses riddle glasses. And I think being so interesting because there's so much subtlety and nuance. Oh, can you taste the black currant? Oh, yeah, I can taste the black currant. And just that subtlety is so much about what good marketing is about, and being able to pick up on that and play into those, I don't know, people's perceptions of things. So I'm sure that experience will bode you well for the rest of your life.
Yeah, I mean, Riddell is the greatest. It's an interesting observation because I just read Byron Sharp's book, it talks about how you need to build market brand assets. And Riddell is the perfect example of that, in that, like, at the end of the day, they're just glass blowers. Like, they make glassware. And at the end of the day, there is no scientific reason for wine to taste better in this glass versus that glass. There is legitimately no reason other than the suggestiveness of the Riddell brand.
That's right. There's a backstory, but there's not a reason.
There's no reason. It's the way that they do it as well. Like the family, it is so like magical. It is what, you know, often what you guys as an agency can sometimes bring to a brand. What was the tagline here? I had it written down somewhere. Measured magic.
Yeah. Tagline is measured magic, which is marketing sciences meets hardcore creativity. But I think there's a really, just in terms of what you're talking about, there's a really nice saying about advertising. I forget who said it, but it's advertising is the wonder in Wonder Bread.
Yeah.
It's just nice. It's the marketable.
So like if you look at, like, they build, it's sort of like, I don't know if have you watched Severance recently, show?
Yeah, yeah.
For people listening, I strongly recommend they go say it. It is like a cult. They build up this idea of the Egan family and Keir, who's the founder, and they do the same thing. Johan is the founder in the Riddell family. They've got a story, and the way that they dress is so cliche and so cool that it sort of just permeates the brand even further. My experience of Riddell was, everyone was like, oh, Riddell, you have to have Riddell at a restaurant. There was Spieglau, which is a very good competitor and as nice to look at glassware. But the way that the Riddell family would come in and they'd tour Australia, or the son would do it, or the sister would do it, and they would just come in and they would do this whole, it was like seeing a magician. That's what it is. It's that suggestiveness of like, now smell this in this paper cup. Smell this wine. Now pour it into your Riddell glass. And doesn't that smell so much better? You can really get notes of, what did you say before? Blueberry.
Yeah.
So it's amazing. I love it.
And a good sommelier, or a good, anyone can do that on a one-to-one level, a really strong. And when people try to think about a big brand, it's trying to take that and trying to operationalize that and ritualize that. And those characters, those signs, those symbols, those rituals, just trying to get all of that systematized so you can build scale with that, is really, really hard. And that's where I think the next big wave in marketing or my industry is kind of going, is taking that and operationalizing those things at scale.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the hard part, is operationalizing it. That's a good point. We're going to jump on like more marketing science later, because like I said, I've gone deep on Byron Scharf, Mark Ritson, and all those sort of guys. And yeah, it's opened my mind. Just a quick one. What did you think you were going to be growing up? Like, what was the job you thought you'd have?
It's good. Yeah, I was good with my hands, and I've always been good with people. So Mum suggested I become a hairdresser.
Okay.
And so at one stage I thought about being a hairdresser. Then I was going to be a school teacher. I honestly never thought I could be happy being gainfully employed. I never thought I'd be able to have a job working all the time where I'd be happy doing that. So I can remember getting a job at Credit Services, just being happy that I was happy, just thinking, oh, fuck, I can do something and it's kind of cool. So I always had quite low ambitions of any kind of corporate life. And the fact that I've been able to achieve something is quite amazing in my own head.
Yeah, right. Well, how old were you when you thought that?
Oh, it's all through forever until it happened, I think. I was always worried about not being able to be satisfied. You know, always trying to think of myself as an outsider and having to be maverick or living the life of an artist or something, but not being happy being, yeah, and even the money thing, right? Because that was also created a bit of dissonance for me because I wanted to be wealthy, but wondering how the fuck that was going to happen.
As an artist. Yeah, it doesn't really work, does it?
No.
What did your parents do?
My dad was a judge and my mum's an artist. And so, yeah, and then my uncle was very wealthy. And so there was a famous book in the 80s called Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And it was about a very dutiful father, but he also had, I think it was actually his mate's dad who was really rich. And so he used to learn a lot of lessons. So my uncle used to teach me about the share market and all that kind of stuff. My mum instilled it in me kind of this whole idea about being different and being an artist and following your passions. And my dad was kind of pretty steady and dutiful.
Yeah, right. Interesting. And you think those are the two lessons that you pulled for them, is that your father was a structured, reason-based man and your mother was creative in the highest sense?
I reckon you could correlate it like that. I don't know if there's a cause and effect, but I was very much, mum especially championed me to be maverick and be your own person and all that kind of stuff. And but she also really instilled in me a hate of order and structure. And so right. I never really got the order and structure bit happening in a kind of coherent way.
Yeah, right. Interesting.
And we got there lunch. Now, oh, I do. Sorry, buddy. To the point now that I still look down on people, and I know I shouldn't, who are really structured. Like, it takes all my effort to think, that's really valuable, those skills of being ordered and structured. It takes effort because it's not innate for me, because I've learned not to admire those skills.
Yeah,
and right. I often try to create little whirlwinds of chaos wherever I go, much to the fucking annoyance of everyone around me.